Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck here in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn, hanging out with us. We were both up very late last night, Coach. You were on your duties on the smoker,
right?
And I was hanging in for every pitch.
I could not believe it. Like I was telling you earlier, I leave the house to go to work, and I turn on the radio, and the game's still on live.
Just an instant classic, an all-time postseason baseball game, an all-time World Series game, a couple of all-time performances, including a couple of Blue Jays.
Yeah,
you know, Lauer keeps them in that game.
Hey, they didn't quit now.
No. And Will Klein, who gives the Dodgers
fits.
I mean, just gives the Dodgers like a gigantic boost when they don't have anyone else left in the bullpen.
Yeah.
How about Yoshi? How about Yamamoto warming up like a maniac who's going to go in 2 days after
he's
a complete
crazy
game? And he was serious. Like they said he was ready. Like they had an at bat where they could have gone to Yoshi. It was either going to be Yoshi or a position player. And then Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
Again,
brave.
A sequel to last year's World Series heroics.
Who is from Canada, correct?
Freddie Freeman is he's got a family in Southern California. He's been embraced by the Dodgers over these last couple of years. You're right, he's a brave. We had someone ask on The Drive recently what uniform Freddie could wear in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not looking to poke the bear on that one. Like, I think he did enough as a Brave, and he's nowhere close in total at bats or games played. But he has had some gigantic moments as a Dodger.
Yes.
And another one last night in a game three where, I mean, Coach, you've been in some marathons. You've been in some games that came down to the absolute last possession.
Yeah, a couple of overtimes.
And it just feels like maybe it could take on. Obviously, it's different in a playoff series.
Right.
But just in general, like, I was worried about a hangover effect from Auburn after losing that Missouri game the way they did.
Yeah.
I think Texas A&M people would tell you last year losing that game to Auburn the way they did, and then having to get back off the mat and play Texas shortly thereafter. I mean, they didn't have as much wind in their sails after something like that. Like, I just, I think that for the, you know, it feels like maybe the Blue Jays are down more than just 2-1.
Yeah,
right now after
so
a game
hard
like that.
You put so much in it, and like you said, this is the playoffs. This is win or we go home. And even when we were involved in like a game down to the wire, there's so much emotion. You're just drained. And even with the overtimes, the one good thing, I guess, about college football is they've changed the overtime rules. When I was coaching, you just went back and forth from the 35.
If I gave you the magic wand and said, how do you decide a game that's tied in regulation in college football, what would you want to see?
I would like to see almost like the pros do it.
You like still playing real?
Yeah, but not,
don't turn it into a shootout necessarily.
Right,
make it a game.
I mean,
because
coin flip
and a team gets it at the 25 or
right,
so, and then
right.
and then yeah.
But I also realize because of health and the number of games we play and all that, it's probably not realistic. But they've gotten it better with not letting it go 4, 5, or 6, or 7, which it still can. But it's less likely when you put the ball on a three after the first possession. Or is it the second possession?
So my thing, so the second possession is where you have to start
on a three, correct?
And then you start going for two. Yeah. No, you play two real, you two play two regular overtimes.
And then they put it on a three.
And then they start putting it on the three.
That's right.
Auburn and Missouri almost made it to the point where you're sort of in that shootout
yeah.
style.
Well, I think you could see a little bit of Missouri having a tough game the way they played.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they played Vanderbilt tough, but they didn't run the ball and all that. Like
losing Bo Perbula, I think, is just man, although tough. I mean he's a gutsy quarterback, and we'll talk a little bit about quarterback today.
Yeah,
you know, we're still reacting to Auburn's victory over Arkansas. You know, I know a lot of folks wanted to see more offense in that game, especially considering how often Auburn was in the red zone.
Yeah, still struggling.
I get that, but the fact that you. I mean, on the other side of that coin would be you rallied from down 11
right.
on the road
right.
with a backup quarterback and a backup center.
Right.
And I will go ahead,
Coach. And your defense was super. You know,
how good is this front seven?
Very good.
Good. How about this? There's a line in the notes, Coach, that I thought you would appreciate. The last time Auburn held its opponent to 24 or fewer in the first 8 games of the season – was 2005. You were part of that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good team, by the way.
Yeah.
The 05 team. That's Georgia Tech and LSU are the only two upsets, and that's a front seven that has right. a pretty memorable Iron Bowl that
yes.
year, if you recall.
Yeah.
And it's also, how about this? The Auburn's run defense has allowed 472 total yards through 5 league games. 472
yep.
rushing yards
yep.
through 5 SEC games. That's the fewest since the 2005 team allowed 471
yeah.
in 5 league games. So yeah. you go back, you got to go back a couple, you know, and yeah. that was, like we were saying, you had a pretty special group in the front
yeah,
seven.
Yeah, we were really good, and it's a shame we blew those 2 games because, you know, that team was special and could have been even more special if we wouldn't have let those 2 slip.
But a phenomenal season. I mean, I remember
yeah,
just like
yeah.
I mean,
is that the Cotton Bowl year?
That is I think that's Wisconsin.
Yeah,
that's the 2006 is Cotton Bowl. 2005 is Barry Alvarez.
His last game.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't help that. I mean, we helped him, but not us. Yeah, that was a bad.
There's a lot
game.
Of stories about that bowl game that are.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about it that much. We had a guy, one coach just left after the game. He's supposed to be in a press conference. But anyway, another story.
I think to see Auburn, I was worried about to sort of pivot from the World Series to
right.
this Auburn football season.
Like, right.
I was worried about how often the defense could keep delivering these performances.
Yep.
And I was worried about a hangover effect from the Missouri
right.
game.
You worry about morale, the hangover. Now here we go again. When Arkansas went up,
and I think people are also it was maybe easy to underestimate how good Arkansas's offense was because
right.
of their win loss record.
Right,
like most teams that have bad conference win loss records, if you look at the major conferences this season, most of them have offense problems, and most of them have quarterback problems.
Exactly,
that's a common thread. Arkansas is an exception to that rule,
mm-hmm.
and to see Auburn's defense, and they're also running for 200 plus a game in league play on the ground.
Right, right. They shut them down, and then that second half, they just in the fourth quarter, I've never seen anything like that. What, 4 turnovers in a row?
To see Auburn's defense keep answering the bell, and to see Auburn's yeah. offense with a quarterback change
respond.
You know,
enough.
And, yeah, exactly, and doing enough,
and your kicker came through,
and control the game in a way that I thought, like, you know, I'm curious to see what with a full week of prep Ashton Daniels can do as the quarterback, and I was unable to make it. I had something else going on this morning, so I couldn't go to the practice
right.
window. I've been in contact with a couple of the guys. Justin mm-hmm. Ferguson wrote a great write up for the
sure.
Observer,
sure,
and I thought, Coach. And I've never been in these coach and quarterback conversations, not for a long time. We were very little when I,
yeah.
I got to listen in on those conversations.
Right.
But like I've seen enough of them. You know, I've heard enough of these. You know, I've seen enough coaches at press conferences. I thought the comments yesterday felt like he was trying to keep Jackson Arnold involved.
Yeah.
It was comments that felt like. Jackson may not start Saturday, but there's a chance before the end of this season we need Jackson to help us win a game, and we don't need him to check out because he's been benched.
Right.
And so he's saying, I think, the things that you would need to say to keep that quarterback in, but I did not leave that press conference thinking Ashton Daniels. I went into that press conference and left the press conference thinking Ashton Daniels is probably going to be the first guy up on Saturday because of the way that he played in the second half against Arkansas. And it's a matter of – he needs to play his way out of the job now.
Right.
And if he doesn't, and if Auburn keeps winning, they're gonna do exactly that.
Yeah, a couple thoughts. Number one is you're exactly right. He had to say that. He had to say that about Jackson. And I also agree with you. I think there would be mutiny if they didn't play the other kid or start Ashton, because I think he would lose the team after the response, the enthusiasm, and winning, you know, the game. So I think that's what they're going to probably do. I think you're right.
Tell you what we're going to do is we're going to talk with Andy Burcham,
great,
the voice of the Auburn Tigers, when we come back. Take a break a little bit early. Dan Peck here in the studio with Coach Don Dunn. Stick around. This is The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday edition of The Drive, and I have to offer my sincerest apologies to our next guest, because we usually have him at the top of the show. It slipped my mind. I went 18 innings deep last night. I watched the whole thing, and I am struggling to do even basic tasks today, but including remember that at the very beginning of the show on Tuesday, we are pleased to welcome in the voice of the Auburn Tigers, our good friend Andy Burcham, who joins us on the phone. What's up, Andy?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you. Congratulations to your Dodgers to take a 2-1 lead in that series. Fabulous game last night, this morning.
And it's a delight when the World Series games are highly competitive, right? When you get games that aren't decided early on and where one team can just sort of cruise with a gigantic lead. And that's, I mean, and I didn't think you were going to have a 9-plus inning stretch where neither of these teams scored any runs, right? When you think about the bats in question on both sides, but and certainly I didn't have Will Klein and Eric Lauer as part of the the tip of the spear for both teams, but that's what playoff baseball can do. It can turn some unlikely names into franchise legends.
Sandy Koufax was in attendance last night. I'm surprised they didn't try and go get the left-hander to pitch at some point.
It was tremendous stuff, and now those teams have to try to have enough coffee to get ready for another game tonight, and a gigantic one for both teams with the Dodgers up 2-1 in the series. Andy, we spent some time in the first segment talking about Auburn's rally on Saturday. The first time, in fact, that an Auburn team has trailed by more than 10 points in the Hugh Freeze era and come back to win the game. Hugh Freeze talked about the feelings of here we go again yesterday at the press conference and commended the team's ability to fight it off. What did you see in Fayetteville on Saturday?
Well, it did not end well. That first half did not end well. And it went from a very positive drive for Auburn that Auburn ran the ball all the way down and then threw the pick six. And that was the only pass on that drive. And Auburn really had a chance, I thought, to take control of the game at that point. And the pick six, and all of a sudden the momentum is completely with Arkansas, as it turns out, heading into the locker room. And he echoed those thoughts on Tiger Talk last night over on Wings 94.3, you know, here we go again. And he talked about it with his staff yesterday morning, and he kind of polled the room. How many of you thought this? And I think there were a lot of honest answers that, good gosh, here we go. And yet, that ball club found a way to to come back. And it started with Rayshon Pleasant, who, as we found out from some of his teammates today, called a kickoff return for a touchdown to start the second half. Well, he got to the 50 in doing so. And that, that seemed to set the tone for Auburn. And while Auburn's offense was not great by any stretch of the imagination, it did run the ball well. Auburn really wasn't stopped, except for that pick six from an offensive standpoint, until it got to the red zone. And Hugh Freeze last night said on a couple of those drives last night, he was bound and determined just to get points. He was not going to push it in the red zone. He certainly did not want to force a turnover. And he got the points. And, you know, there were a lot of great stories coming out of that. Rayshon Pleasant with the two interceptions, including the pick six that gave Auburn the lead for good. The 6-for-6 performance by Alex McPherson to match Daniel Carlson and Al Del Greco, two of the all-time greats in Auburn place-kicking history. And Auburn needed every one of those that he had. And it came, of course, after a game where he had his worst game as an Auburn Tiger, missing three field goals. He hadn't missed three field goals in his career, let alone in one game against Missouri, and then came back and was 6-for-6, including a 47-yarder. Talked to him at practice today and asked him about that 47-yard. I said, how did it feel coming off your foot? Because it was a low trajectory. He said, yeah, I was kicking into the wind, and so I took it a little bit lower and kind of hit a Tiger Woods stinger on that and had plenty of room to spare. But it was good to see him respond the way he did. What Jeremiah Cobb did with the career-high 28 carries for 153 yards in that ball game. To watch Ashton Daniels lead that Auburn offense in the second half. Nothing spectacular, but no big mistakes either. And then the defense with turnovers on the last four offensive drives for Arkansas, including two picks by Rayshon Pleasant, another by Kinsley Ladur Faustin, and then Xavier Atkins punching the ball out, Sylvester Smith getting the fumble recovery. And it was an opportunity for that locker room to smile after a game, and it hadn't been able to do that since the Ball State game, or really since the South Alabama game. It had not been able to do that in four straight SEC games. And it was good to see that locker room smile. It was a much lighter mood on the team playing coming home on Saturday night. Now you get ready to come back to Jordan-Hare Stadium, a night game with Kentucky coming to town at 6:40, I think, is the actual kickoff time for Auburn this Saturday. And we'll be on the air at 3:30 right here on Wings 94.3.
Well, Andy, I think one of the reasons that the game felt like it was in such jeopardy on Saturday when Arkansas gets the turnover and takes an 11-point lead, not only do you need the offense to figure out a way to you know, overcome being down 11 points, you need the defense to hold on, and you assume Arkansas is going to keep scoring points. The fact that Auburn's defense was able to have the performance that they have, again, a fifth straight performance in SEC play where they hold the other team down considerably below their averages. Obviously the quarterback switch matters a lot, and Ashton Daniels is going, like, it's important to talk about what this team could be if Ashton Daniels provides even moderately better quarterback play than what they've had so far. But a lot of the reason these games have been winnable so far, and a reason the Arkansas game was there for the taking, is because this defense is playing as well as any Auburn defense in recent memory.
Well, and especially against the run. It is just so good against the run, and that was a very good Auburn offense that Auburn played on Saturday in Arkansas. And that's a very good quarterback in Taylen Green and Washington at tailback. And it's just that's an offense that a week ago against Texas A&M, which is the lone undefeated team now in the Southeastern Conference, and scored 42 points on that defense. That's impressive. And what Auburn did to go out and hold that team to 24 points and, of course, gave up a pick six for seven of those points, to do that and then to close that game the way it did as convincingly as it did, with four straight turnovers, and all four happened about the same place on the field. That left half of the quadrant against that Auburn defense, and two picks by Pleasant, another by LaDour Faustin, and then the fumble recovery caused by Xavier Atkins, who just continues to amaze at linebacker for Auburn, and then Sylvester Smith picked it up for the fumble recovery. But that was really impressive game, and I thought guys up front, Bobby Jamison Travis, I thought was really good on Saturday. I thought Dallas Walker had one of his best games as that plug. And I think Don can appreciate a guy that does his job and plugs the gap.
Yes,
at nose tackle for Auburn. And I thought that was really impressive what he did. But nobody, including Rayshon Pleasant, was as impressive as Xavier Atkins. 13 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks at Arkansas. And I think that's the third straight game that he has posted a career high in tackles. And this is a guy that perhaps was too small to play at LSU. And I'm not trying to stir anything up. You think LSU wishes it still had Xavier Atkins on its roster? I darn sure know that Auburn is happy to have that young man and just a sophomore playing as well as anyone on that defense for the Tigers.
Andy, whoever it is tasked with finding linebackers in the portal that are, for lack of a better word, on the clearance rack, right? Like when you think about Eugene Asante, you know, and Mousy, and now Xavier Atkins being as impactful. He's second in the SEC in sacks, right? Like, I mean, this is incredible, the season he's having and coming relatively out of nowhere to do it.
If he continues, it'll be a shame that he's not a first-team All-SEC linebacker. He certainly deserves those accolades. And, you know, it's two really interesting stories that start in the middle of that Auburn defense as linebackers, because you've got one guy in Robert Woodyard that decided to stick with it at Auburn and could have transferred out. And his dad, according to Coach Freeze, his dad talked to him and said, you're going to stay the course. And now he is playing the best football of his career. And then you have a guy like Xavier Atkins, and Will Redmond is Auburn's general manager in football, and Kenyatta Watson. Those guys are pouring over the transfer portal all the time. And when that guy became available, when Xavier Atkins became available, Auburn went after him. But I don't know if Auburn thought that they were getting the return that they're getting immediately from Xavier Atkins that they are at this point. But hats off to Auburn for recognizing that potential. Certainly hats off to the young man for the season that he has had so far for Auburn. And now Auburn gets tested by another good offense this Saturday in Kentucky. Cutter Bowley, their redshirt freshman quarterback, has had his best two games as a Kentucky Wildcat coming in, going 31 of 39 against Texas in an overtime loss, and then throwing for a career-high 330 yards in that loss to Tennessee last week. Now, the question, I think, for Tennessee coming in offensively is, do they get Seth McGowan back at tailback? Because the 1-2 punch of McGowan and Dowdell is really, really good. But McGowan, who transferred in from Oklahoma, did not play last week against Tennessee because of a shoulder. I believe that injury occurred in the Texas game, and we don't know if he will play. That it may be a game time decision as to whether Seth McGowan plays against Auburn on Saturday. But we have seen what Auburn has done against really good running teams this season, and Auburn has done it extraordinarily well this week against the run. And I expect that we will see that again this Saturday against Kentucky coming in.
Yeah, two tremendous defensive performances Saturday from guys that were not on last year's team, Atkins and Rayshon Pleasant, both having, right, you know, both you know, a huge part of Auburn's victory. You mentioned Cutter Bowley.
Career days for both.
Yep. You mentioned Cutter Bowley, the quarterback at Kentucky. He's a hometown guy, right? He's from, I'm going to defer to Coach Dunn here on Kentucky geography, Hogdenville. That's the hometown, but he played at Lexington Christian in Lexington.
Right.
Now he's the starter. And speaking of quarterback, Andy, I'd love to know what you thought Ashton Daniels brought to the offense when Auburn made the switch? Because I thought there was a, beyond the numbers, I thought there was a calmness, there was a poise, there was a level of control that wasn't always there with Jackson in the game.
Well, you know, and I don't want, because I mean, we still may see Jackson start this game on Saturday. There was no starter named yesterday by Hugh Freeze. We asked him again about it last night on Tiger Talk, and he stayed with the, he wants to see the competition between Jackson Arnold and Ashton Daniels. I just thought he ran the offense well. And he didn't, I mean, it was a lot of handing off on Saturday. I mean, when you've got a guy that is running as well as Jeremiah Cobb right now, who's number two in the Southeastern Conference with 717 yards rushing as Auburn's RB1. And hasn't he stepped up for Auburn since Damari Alston moved on? Jeremiah Cobb has taken full advantage, I believe, of that situation. But I thought he made the throws he needed. There was one throw that Coach Freeze talked about last night, and Ashton alluded to it when he met with the media today, that if he stays in the pocket, I believe it was Perry Thompson that he had open in the end zone for a touchdown. If he just stays in the pocket and makes the throw needed. But beyond that, I thought he was just really good. It wasn't spectacular. He didn't have to be spectacular for Auburn. A two-point conversion that turned out to be very, very big. It came after the Rayshon Pleasant interception for a touchdown that gave Auburn the lead, and then the two-point conversion gave Auburn a three-point lead. So I just, yeah, was there a calmness, perhaps? You know, this is a young man in Daniels who is, listen, from what I gather, this is a guy that had interest in Auburn before he went to Stanford. He's from Buford, Georgia, and for Stanford a year ago, threw for 1,700 yards, 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Rushed for another 669 yards and three more touchdowns. So he is a dual threat quarterback, but a guy that decided to stay at Stanford through spring ball to graduate. All right. And graduated and was here this summer. And that may have worked against him in the competition with Jackson Arnold. I think by the time he came here, Jackson Arnold was QB1. And it wasn't as though I thought Jackson played poorly on Saturday, but the one bad throw he made could have been a crushing blow for Auburn in that game. And we were all ready at some point to see Ashton Daniels play, because it's been talked about for 3 weeks now that we could see Ashton Daniels. And I think that was the avenue. And I thought he did all right in that last, and I think it helped that he was able to get in the game before or on that last offensive drive after the pick six. So he at least got in the game, kind of got into the rhythm before halftime, because you remember Auburn got the ball first to open the second half. So Ashton had been out there for a few plays, a handful of plays, before that second half started on Saturday. I think that helped him.
Talking with Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, and yeah, I mean, like you said, there's no official announcement. There's competition reports that Ashton was the first up at the practice window earlier today when the media was able to watch it. But I thought Hugh Freeze, you know, I believed him yesterday when he talked about how Jackson could still be very important to this team and this season, even if he's not the first quarterback up on Saturday, and he owes it to himself and everyone else to stay as ready as possible.
And it's both ways. Ashton Daniels was asked today, you know, what if you're not the starting? He says, I'm ready for whatever role comes my way on Saturday. I thought it was the right attitude. We did not get an opportunity to talk to Jackson Arnold. My guess is he'd have said the same thing. And these guys are both competitors. And Jackson's had some really good games for Auburn this year and has had really good spots in games for Auburn this year. But I think the one thing that the most important thing that Hugh Freeze is looking for right now for his quarterback is consistency. There have been some, I mean, listen, Auburn has scored on its first offensive drive in the last three ball games. And those were all quarterbacked by Jackson Arnold. But there have been times where the play has fallen off for Jackson. And if it is Jackson on Saturday or if it's Ashton Daniels on Saturday, Hugh Freeze wants to see consistency out of his quarterback. And we'll just wait and see. I'm fascinated to see how the rest of this week goes on and who is the guy that steps foot at Jordan-Hare Stadium for Auburn in Kentucky on Saturday night.
Ooh, it could be a chilly night, Andy. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm well, Bill. Good to hear from you. Yeah. At least it's going to be dry, I believe.
That is right.
It rained not hard, but it rained pretty steady in Fayetteville on Saturday, and it was chilly. I didn't take enough layers on Saturday. I guarantee you I'll have layers this Saturday night when Auburn and Kentucky get together. But, it's going to be a chilly evening, but I think at least in the last forecast I saw, it's going to be dry.
Yeah,
it's going to feel like football weather on Saturday night.
That is absolutely right. And here we are, basketball's getting going. Another exhibition coming up Thursday night. But this one, will you guys have any involvement in the Thursday night?
We are not doing any coverage of the game Thursday night. It is something that we will, in all likelihood, approach differently next year with regard to the exhibitions, just because Marathon Oil isn't coming to Neville Arena anymore. That was the team.
Right.
I could never remember.
Marathon Oil
came and played at Auburn every year here at the Coliseum, it seemed like. Now, the way that has changed, and we will approach it a little bit differently next year. But you've got Memphis at 7:30 Central Time Thursday night in Atlanta, a Memphis team that played really well in the first half against Arkansas last night. Arkansas turned the tables, I thought, on Memphis in the second half last night. But as Stephen Pearl talked about at his press conference this afternoon, there isn't a guard on that Oklahoma State team that is as quick as the guards that Auburn will face against Memphis on Thursday night. Auburn's going to have to step up its game on Thursday. And I think Auburn will approach that game. I think Stephen Pearl will approach that game differently as the head coach. I think against Oklahoma State, he wanted to see guys. He wanted to see rotations. I think he still wants that, but I think this one here, I think he's coaching. This game is like a regular season game in his mind on Thursday night. And then we're less than a week away now from the opener.
That is right.
Auburn and Bethune-Cookman. Bethune-Cookman is coached by, are you ready for this, Reggie Theus.
Yep.
I did not know that.
Reggie Theus is the athletic director and the head basketball coach at Bethune-Cookman. Fabulous NBA player, All-American at UNLV.
Yeah.
So he brings Bethune-Cookman in here. Finished 13, I think, and 7 in the SWAC a year ago. So, but like so many teams, including Auburn, a brand new roster that comes in with Bethune-Cookman. And let me just mention this, and we mentioned it on Tiger Talk last night. With Monday night being the opener in a 7 o'clock game, we will do Tiger Talk from Neville Arena. We will not be at Baumhauer's this coming Monday. We will do Tiger Talk from Neville Arena this coming, and it will be a combined Tiger Talk and pregame leading up to Auburn and Bethune-Cookman. So we'll be doing everything there at Neville starting at 6 o'clock on Monday night. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to another sellout crowd at Neville Arena on Monday.
Andy, got to see Reggie Theus's Bethune team play Troy a couple years ago as part of a doubleheader, and so I was aware. And don't forget, when you're talking about Reggie Theus, his performance on the NBC sitcom Hang Time as Coach Fuller for a couple of seasons. See if you can work that into the broadcast on Monday.
We will definitely bring that will be worked into the broadcast. But then, of course, Auburn turns around, and a week from Thursday, it's Merrimack College in town. So three straight home games for the Tigers before Auburn moves again away from Neville Arena. But here we go. We're about the crossover season to start November with football, of course, on Saturday, basketball Thursday or Monday and Thursday. And then women's basketball also opens up on Monday afternoon, right here on ESPN 106.7 against Charlotte at Charlotte. So lots of basketball coming up right here on the Auburn Network family of stations.
Yes, it is. A busy time. And Anthony, Andy, anything else that we need to know about things coming up with the Auburn Sports Network?
Talking Tigers podcast this week deals with the decade on the plains of Butch Thompson, who last week had celebrated 10 years as Auburn's head baseball coach, which includes two trips to the College World Series, four NCAA regional championships, and hosting its first ever super regional. And so we look back on the first 10 years of Butch Thompson's career at Auburn. Coming up next week, two Auburn University graduates, that have worked with individual teams on the Auburn campus and now are part of Auburn's NIL events team, Scott Duvall and Bianca Webb. They team up for the Talking Tigers podcast coming up on Monday. And then a week from Monday, the guy that is called the offensive guru for Auburn men's basketball, who grew up north of Boston, went to Miami, and served as a manager and started at the very basic level as an equipment manager at the University of Miami, and has now made his way to being Auburn's offensive coordinator and full-time head basketball or assistant basketball coach, Mike Burgermaster. So those are what we're working on here on the Talking Tigers podcast. On our show, on the tailgate show on Saturday, we will talk one in our campus spotlight, Dean Calvin Johnson, who's the dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Auburn in our campus spotlight. Will Hastings is our guest picker this week, the former Auburn wide receiver who lives in town. So we're going to talk with Will. He's going to give us his picks. Jamel Dean, Gabe Wright are also set to join us on the pregame show on Saturday. We're still working on that and working on our list of a guest coming up when Auburn goes to Vanderbilt next week.
4:30 airtime?
It's a never-ending process.
Oh, yeah. Is it 4:30 airtime?
3:30 airtime on Saturday.
My bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. 3:30 on Saturday. 6:40 is the official kick time with no slide. So we'll kick it off at 6:40 on a wear blue night. Everyone has to wear blue, wear your navy, and bundle up. It's going to be a chilly evening, but a fun evening for football at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Absolutely. Great talking to you, Andy. I was delayed getting in, but appreciate you being on with us. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure, guys. You have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. I have made it in. Are you going to slide out?
I think I may go to try to make the exhibition here.
Yeah. I mean, you've got an exhibition. You need to see him in action before you call him.
I think that's probably a pretty good idea with a largely new roster. Right, you guys got it from here?
I think we can
have it. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Don and I'll be back. Love for you to join in here on the Tuesday Drive. What day is today?
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Yeah, I swear, I don't know why I feel like it's Monday. I guess it's because I was thinking about something that's coming up in a couple of Mondays. Maybe the fact that I wasn't here at the start. I don't know. But it's the Tuesday Drive with Bill and Don and Coach Don Dunn. If you were tuning in about 20 minutes ago, it was Dan and Coach Dunn.
Yeah.
So like we said yesterday.
Magic.
Well, we said yesterday, Dan would be here for at least part of the show, but maybe not all the show. And I would be here for maybe part of the show, but not all of the show. Had an appointment that I knew was going to carry. I didn't think there was any way I'd be done by 4. But had to get it done. But here and underway, we're going now. You guys, now I don't know exactly what you talked about. I was able to listen about the time you started getting Andy on.
Yeah, we talked mostly about the game last night, how long it was, how exciting. Can they come back after a loss like that?
Well, you wonder about the psyche of the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
But then I wondered, Drew and I were just talking, the Dodgers had more guys that played 18 innings last night.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're at home, so they got a chance to, go home and try to get some rest home before they come back for
Bill,
tonight's
game. Let me ask you a question. I know you're a baseball guy, and I was thinking last night, did they always play back-to-back like this in the World Series?
Well, yeah, I mean—
Remember they played the old afternoon games? I love the transistor radio.
Because it's 2-3-2.
Okay.
So since you've got the games all being played at the same place.
Okay.
You get a travel day between when you swap sites.
Okay.
But when you're playing at the same location, it's not unusual at all.
Okay.
You're not playing any more than three days in a row.
Right.
However, they could play because the Dodgers they could play four games worth in 3 days.
Yeah.
Because they played two games worth last night. And it's gonna have to go at least through game five. So they've got to play two more games. So they're gonna play 36 innings over 3 days.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. But what a game, huh?
Whoop. Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I told Drew though that I made it through like the 15th, and I could tell from what Toronto had left. Toronto had made more subs.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they were going to score. And I kept thinking the Dodgers are going to score here. Like, was it the 13th or 14th where they loaded the bases? Oh, yeah. You know, they had a leadoff double went in and they load the bases and they couldn't score. But I just felt like they're going to break through. And sort of fitting that it was Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
With a walk-off.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers have now played the three longest World Series games. Have all been the Dodgers, and have all come in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
and
that's something. Yeah. Wow. But, what a classic. An instant classic, as they say.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Yeah, all right, so, yeah, sure. that we can obviously talk some more football. Got to get, as we get into hour number two, we only got a couple of minutes left here in hour number one. Get into hour number two, we'll talk about more changes. I mean, I thought heading into Friday's game, And Saturday's game, and I said this on Friday's show, that an LSU loss could be bad for Brian Kelly. Now, I didn't think it would be – he'd be gone. Of course, I also didn't think they'd give up 35 unanswered points in the second half to Texas A&M. But, I mean, we're looking at the schedule and going, if LSU loses this is their third loss.
Mm-hmm.
They still have to go to Tuscaloosa. The next ball game's in Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
And then they close the season at Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So – there was a very good chance, I thought, if they lost, that they could be looking at a 5-loss season. And that probably could really ratchet up the pressure under Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
I mean, that pressure all of a sudden was exponentially ratcheted up. And it blew up.
It sure did.
Late Saturday night, early Sunday morning.
It sure did. And I was like you. I was shocked that he was actually let go. But like you say, the humiliation of that second half at their place on a Saturday night,
and
that doesn't happen.
And they're chanting, when LSU fans are chanting, fire Brian Kelly.
I mean, just the whole fourth quarter.
Yeah. The ones that were left.
Yeah, and then
there weren't many left.
Then to add, insult to injury, all their fans came down and took over the student section. Did you see that, A&M fans? Yeah, I was shocked.
They hadn't won there in 31 years.
Well, I know. Yeah, not many people have, like you said, and I think his demeanor and some of the things he supposedly
he rubs
said
people the wrong way
and
a
just
lot of
snapping
the
and throwing
and
everybody under the bus.
I think he does it intentionally at times.
Yeah, and then they kept showing that press conference when he tried to talk Southern and stuff. My wife and I always get a kick out of that.
That was
crazy.
AD Scott Woodward
called
him in, called Brian Kelly in Sunday morning. And from reports, it started out hostile. I mean, Brian Kelly came in yelling at the AD.
Yeah.
Now, I guess if you've got a $50 million buyout, maybe you can yell at your boss.
Yeah, but that's
but
just
I mean,
stupid.
And apparently it got much worse after that. Really.
Yeah, I've heard some things, too. I need to call Steve Ensminger, who still lives in Baton Rouge, and find out what the heck's going on. Wow. What? I mean, it's how many jobs now?
9 Power 4 jobs, 3 SEC.
Have you ever seen? No, of course no, we've never seen anything like this happening. This time of year.
Mid-season or before November.
Yes.
Before November. That is what's crazy.
That's crazy.
And it ain't done.
No, sir. It's not done. That's
all right,
true.
We're approaching the top of the hour, about halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. We'd love for you to join in. We'll open up the drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us as we take a break and then come back for hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Dan got things started. He's headed down to Troy to check out the Troy women's basketball team. They've got an exhibition tonight before their upcoming opener.
Won't be long.
And this is an opportunity for him to see. They're not broadcasting, but he'll have an opportunity to see the team before he broadcasts. And I had some things I had to get taken care of, so I was a little late getting in, but glad to be able to get in and let Dan head down and see the Trojans. But it's so Coach Don Dunn is here in the studio alongside me. Don, you doing all right?
Doing great. Had an interesting weekend. You know, I had a close friend of mine pass away, and I had to go up to the funeral. But I'd already scheduled up in East Tennessee. They had asked me to present an award,
right,
which I was lucky enough to get last year. I still don't know why or how, but I think they got the names wrong. But I got to speak to the team on Friday night at their pregame meal.
Uh-huh.
Very impressive. Big difference in the size of guys. I hadn't seen, you know, East Tennessee.
It is amazing.
Yeah. Now, they had some great-looking kids. Beautiful little campus. The leaves were changing. We had a great day. We got up Saturday morning. It was 31 and frost on the windshield.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got to go to the funeral and see everyone there, and then it was kind of good that I got away from that and went to see some old buddies and talk to the team. And they won. They beat Wofford barely, 14-10, and we had a nice weekend.
Not good.
And watched the Auburn game. I got home in time to watch it, and really the best part, the fourth quarter, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
I was so impressed.
Well, as a defensive guy, you've got to love that.
Yeah, and then against Bobby, ooh, I hated – I wouldn't want to have been in that meeting with the quarterbacks.
Hey, one thing, I mean, look, we haven't talked about them enough, and that's the big guys up front on defense. Auburn has – a better situation than just about any team that I've seen. I mean, the depth and the quality of talent that they have in that defensive front depth gives them a chance against
anybody. And they're playing the run so well. And, you know me, I preach on it every day, stop the run, stop the run, stop the run. And they're doing that. They're probably nationally ranked. I didn't have a chance today to look.
Auburn definitely is. Auburn's given up well under 100 yards a game on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's against – you know, this is not against a bunch of nobodies.
No, those last
Arkansas
four.
Came in averaging 225 yards a game rushing.
Yeah,
Auburn held them to 63.
Yeah, that's on the road.
Yes,
which is great. So, you always have a chance, Bill. Like we talked last week, when your defense plays well and travels, like we always say. And I thought the quarterback. You know, I hate it when someone has to be benched, but you got to do that. And I thought the kid gave us a spark.
I thought so, too. I thought he looked poised. I thought he looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
he says the right things. He's a smart kid, like we were talking during the break. You graduate from Stanford in 3 years? I don't care.
You graduate from anywhere in 3 years. Yeah. It's impressive. But from Stanford?
Yeah, it took me about eight. But
took me longer than four.
Yeah. But I was very impressed. I think I heard you guys yesterday talking. The second half kickoff return was electric, and it kind of gave us a spark. And they were kind of like we were. You could kind of see their players, oh, no, here we go again.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's one of the things that Hugh was asked about, and he talked about it. But, yeah, Arkansas Their losing streak is now at six.
Yeah, and
so, they
lose a game like that where they had the lead 21-10, I believe, and at home, and their fans, there weren't many left. There was a lot of Auburn fans left, and that's probably not a pleasant place to be right now in Arkansas, and it's not going to get any easier.
No, you're absolutely right. So we can talk about that. Any of the games or anything from over the weekend? We mentioned before the top of the hour the coaching change in Baton Rouge. It is one of those things now, I think, with the current situation that you have with the transfer portal, NIL plays a factor in it too. Teams, schools are trying to get ahead if they can. Now, you're not going to at least have anything announced with most schools unless you find someone who is not coaching.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going out and you get a Jimbo Fisher or Urban Meyer decides to get back
or
to
even
coaching.
Or the guy at Penn State.
Yeah, James Franklin.
Right.
One of those guys. That's the only way you would have your next head coach in place. But I think it's that step that some schools just felt like, especially LSU, they felt like, look, after all Brian Kelly talked about, I'll see you at the national we'll see you at the national championship game, and then you've lost your third game before November and you rubbed so many people the wrong way.
Yeah.
It was just time.
You got to walk in with your hat in your hand.
Now did I get this right? Somebody told me, and I haven't had a chance to check on a lot of things today. Somebody told me there was one person who's covering the Brian Kelly payoff.
I heard that.
I heard that today.
Don and I went to the grocery store, and we have it on the Newhouse or whatever that is on 84 on Sirius Radio, Cyrus, however you say it. I couldn't believe that.
That's exactly what I heard.
And the governor got involved.
Well,
you know how it is. Louisiana politics, what was the old guy?
It was time. Well, if somebody stepped up and said, I got the 50-plus million, then, it's real easy to pull that trigger.
I also heard another rumor from a friend of mine who I don't know how he would know. He's a local guy here. He said he knew a guy. You know how I know a guy, a guy, which means probably, who knows, that he wasn't getting that total. There was something that happened.
Well, there's a lot. I mean,
rumors.
There's always a buzz and people wondering, are there some outs?
More.
Some ways where you don't have to have
there's
that full
more to the story.
Buyout.
Yeah.
So I
was shocked. I mean, I thought they might get rid of him at the end of the year if he continued, if he loses. And they got tough games left, like you said.
they got to go
to Alabama.
And that is their next game.
Yeah, after an open date. So how you gonna those kids?
They ought to win the next two after that. They got Arkansas at home and Western Kentucky at home.
Yeah, they'll beat my boys
before they go to Norman.
Yeah.
But
they'd have kept him.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we can talk about any of that. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybarn. Let's get to it. And Pat is up first. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I wanted to bring up something back in the Georgia game. So, and then I want to give my opinion on this coaching thing. So I watched if you remember the first drive of the game when we were driving down and we threw that pass to Cam that eventually was overturned. I thought, and we all were screaming in the crowd, that the referee, when he spotted the ball, he stood over the ball and we did not sub. I went back and watched it. We did not sub anybody. He would not let us snap the ball. And Hugh Freeze was mad, and so that's why we were all mad.
You're absolutely right about that.
Why would you do that?
There's no reason to do that. If you don't sub,
right.
I mean, as long as they've got the first down marked, as long as it's spotted, they should be able to go ahead and play.
And they,
the guy marking the ball should not stand over the ball because their official marked it as a catch. You know what I'm saying? So otherwise, if that was the case, you just stand over the ball and wait for the review boost to look at the video and see if it's a catch or not. Well, then they would never go fast. So there was a reason why that guy did not spot that ball and not move off the ball, and he did not. and we were trying to hike it. And then Hugh Freeze got out and started yelling. That to me was the beginning when I realized, oh my God, this game is in the tank. I mean, there is absolutely no excuse. And that when they said that these guys got fired was not because of a call on the field, I'm almost thinking that was part of it. Because
there multiple reports said that there were 9 plays that the SEC found that should not have been made.
That's right. Okay, now when it comes to coaching, the problem I have, and I say this, I'm going to pose y'all a question. So let's say, for instance, okay, you got these teams, and I think this is going to start happening. I mean, fan bases, knowing the way NIL is, we're paying all the players, coaches, and whatever. You know, we see how fast teams can turn it around, coaches can turn it around. If you don't have a guy who's going to turn it around, then you're just might as well move on. I mean, in reality, and I think the key is to not hire coaches that you got to buy out. And I think that's why you got to just stay away from, you know, Jimbo Fishers and the people that you know have already failed. Well, you don't want to go down that road.
Well, yeah, the problem is those guys have generally also succeeded enough that they demand those kinds of buyouts.
Jimbo succeeded because of one guy.
The guys that you don't have big buyouts for generally aren't the big names either.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem is we're picking guys that aren't big names and giving them big buyouts, and that's my problem. Mm. You know, that would be a problem. Okay, but so to me, I'm going to pose this question: let's say that we had hired Lane Kiffin back either the last time or the time before, and so let's just say the last time, and so he's got 2 10-win seasons, and we're 7-1 or 7-1-1, whatever we are right now, ranked in the top 10 right now, and everybody's calling right now. Hey, we're gonna give Lane Kiffin $81 million over 6 years. Okay, what would Auburn do? Would we say, oh well, we'll let him go?
No, you know what they'd do. They'd try to match everything, and they'd give them that big buyout.
Okay, so if that is true, and everyone's going after this guy, okay, because they think he's the guy, and he's proven himself, and he's the big splash hire. And if we had him right now, we would definitely amp up the money. And we already know he was going to come here before. Then money ain't the problem. You see what I'm saying? You get to look at it from a different perspective. We saved a bunch of money by not paying him that money this whole time. But now I would have much rather paid that money and had, you know, three or four 10-win seasons. But I'm just saying is, if that is the case, if Auburn would not say, well, they outbid him, we're not paying $13.5 million. If that's the case, then fine. We're not going to ever ante up the money. But if we would do it in that particular instance, if we had gotten him instead of Freeze, and he was winning big, and everyone was coming to get him, if the answer is, well, we'd match the offer, well, then why are we not paying that? Why are we not paying that? Is what I'm asking. If we're trying to win, we're going to build something good. We're going to be good, and we're going to hold on to our coach. But it sounds to me like, well, we're not taking that approach. We're trying to get the up and comer and get him cheap, and that's what it sounds like to me.
It's more difficult.
Not doing that.
It's more difficult, Pat, when you're one of the teams that's trying to get that guy, as opposed to the team that's trying to keep the guy. When you're trying to keep them, you know where you are, and you feel very, very strongly about what's going to be happening over the next few years because there's been proof at your place of what's happening. So you're more likely to reinvest and spend more money on somebody who's already been there and done that than it is when you're going out there and trying to bring somebody else in, because usually, first of all, the school that he's at is going to try to do that and match, and it's tough to pry people away for the same amount. You're going to have to top it. Whereas if you're the one that is holding on to the coach, unless there's been some friction or problems getting along, you're probably going to get them at a little better deal than you would if you're having to go out and bring them in.
But everybody's acting like he's not staying at Ole Miss. He's the perfect guy sitting in a school that's not going to match. He's going somewhere. He's just going to pick the one. Why wouldn't Auburn just, and I'm just saying this, why wouldn't Auburn just get in the pot and just say, hey, look, you know, we'll match the offer too, and just let him pick who he wants. And if he doesn't pick Auburn, that sends a signal that Auburn's trying to get the best. And if we don't get the best, who everyone currently thinks is the best, that's who everybody's going after, then he clearly is the guy that they're going after.
Pat, do you think if offers were even, he'd pick Auburn?
I do. I honestly don't.
I just don't.
Well, but he's already picked us twice. He picked us twice.
I also think somebody pointed this out earlier today. They said, you know what it's sort of like, though? It's sort of like you dated a girl, then things didn't work out. And you dated her again, things didn't work out. Yeah, I don't know how well that third time you're even going to be able to get her to say yes to go out.
Well, if we had made him the highest paid coach back when we were off, when we paid Freeze, he would have came, right? You think there's any way he wouldn't have come if we would have offered him the highest paid coach then?
Oh, no, I think he absolutely would have come.
Okay, well, so then what you're saying is it's only because of Auburn that he didn't come. We're the one that jilted him, technically.
No. I think Auburn offered – they didn't make it just an offer that he couldn't refuse. They made him, from all reports, they made him a very generous offer that was going to be better than what he was getting at Ole Miss. But
that's right.
But what I'm saying is he still was picking us. Yeah, no.
He was picking us then.
That's right. So it meant it would take even more at that time. So now, what do you think it would take? It would take even more. So I mean, you'd have to make sure
I just think you just match what they say. Look, we'll match the offer that's out there, and that's what we'll do. Whatever 81 or whatever it is, and then just sit back. And if he says no, there's no skin off our back. We showed that we're trying to get the best play. We're trying to get the best coach. See, to me, it's almost like everyone else is saying, our fan base, we're all Florida. We're tired of it. We're not doing this anymore. We've had enough. We've had enough losing seasons. But Auburn's like, well, you know, let's go get the Seminole guy or whatever. And I'm like, what? That means we haven't had enough losing seasons yet. So why does Auburn have to have 7 straight losing seasons, whereas Florida and LSU, you know, LSU doesn't even have 1 losing season.
I think LSU's so going to get. I think John Sumrall's going to be to LSU. Pat.
Okay. Well, but that's my point.
But he's not good enough for Auburn, but he's good enough for LSU.
Yeah. I guess my thing is, if somebody's already tried to be your coach 2 times, and then you're like, well, if we give him the max contract, he won't come. That's just so short-sighted. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like he's already wanted to come twice.
I don't know that. I don't know that he's wanted to come. I think there has been interest. But I don't think it was a Lane Kiffin really wanting to be at Auburn. I think he's been very intrigued.
So then when he said, I'm about to make my decision, and then my daughter talked me out of it, what was the decision? Who else was offering him?
I don't know that anybody else was offering him, but I still think Lane is also a guy who tells a really good story. You're hearing one side, and that's the thing. You're not gonna know what Auburn offered. You might hear some things, but I unless you're involved – in that offer, I just can't be sure that it's all, you know, Auburn just messed up. They didn't offer him enough, or they didn't want him enough. So,
well, I guess my thought, Mr. Knopf, this will be the end of my conversation. Is I just feel like if Auburn offered him the max contract, like whatever Florida did, and just sit back, and if he says no, then say, hey, look, you know, we went for the best, and we're going to work our way and get to the next person. And if we end up with somewhere else or somebody else, Auburn fans would feel like we tried. You know what I'm saying? And if he picks us, how can you complain? There's no way on earth we will automatically keep all of our players on offense. He probably would keep Durkin. I would be surprised if he didn't keep Durkin. We would have the best defense. We would start out in the top 10 next year. Guaranteed top 10, automatic. If we don't get him and we get someone or whoever, we're starting at number 30 or 40 or whatever, hoping to keep our players. To me, I just think it's how is it a bad to just throw that offer out there?
You now, take your shot. You take your shot. Yeah, but I mean, you don't. But the thing is, 99% of us aren't going to know if you really took that shot. There's going to be if you don't get him, there's going to be people going, you chickened out. You didn't offer him enough. You didn't really want him. So I mean, that's the thing.
But if you offer him, he turns us down to Florida. That's not embarrassing.
You won't know for sure that he did. I mean,
okay, I don't understand. I'm just saying from a PR, I don't see the downside of offering. If he says yes, thank you, dear baby Jesus. And if he says no, well, hey, we tried. Yeah. I just feel like it's a win-win. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a thought. Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Pat. There just aren't many, many schools or programs that are going to say, hey, we offered this guy. I mean, they're generally, Don, you've seen this thousands of times. Everybody's going to say, we got our guy. We got the guy we really wanted. Whether he was the number one guy, whether he was the number 10 guy on the list, you don't say.
Right.
I mean, the media, you know, at times has a pretty good idea because they've heard that there's negotiations or somebody's about to come. Like, you know, when Auburn hired Pat Dye. Pat Dye wasn't Auburn's top choice. Vince Dooley was.
Mm-hmm.
But and people know that, but does Auburn say, well, we offered Vince Dooley and Bobby Bowden and they turned us down?
Mm-hmm.
No. No, they say, you know, Pat Dye is the coach, the kind of coach we really want, and he's the guy we want.
Right.
So I
you
mean
have to.
Even look, if Lane leaves and goes somewhere, there'll be all kinds of speculation. There'll be all kinds of stories as to who offered him what.
Right.
But you're not going to know for sure. All you're going to know is whoever's got him got
right.
him.
Right. And Jimmy Sexton will be right in, you know, in the middle of it.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
And it's interesting.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Brian Spector, hang on, guys. You're up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, and let's get right back to the phones because we've got a full bank, and Brian gets us started. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. I was calling in for something else, but just to comment on that last caller, you're 100% right, Bill. I mean, and the thing is like it's a buyer or it's a coach's player's market. So
oh, absolutely.
They're going to determine what they're getting, and a coach is. I mean, most coaches are going where they're getting paid the most. They don't unless Lane was like an alumni of Auburn. He's going to go to Florida or LSU or whoever offers him the most money that he wants to stay at, and that might be Ole Miss too. But, I mean, yeah, and the buyout thing, too, is it's like, well, any coach that we get, whether it's Summerall or any coach that we get in the future, is going to have a buyout. Again, that's just the way the market works. You can't say, well, we're not going to give you a buyout. It just doesn't work that way. But the reason I was calling was, Coach, I was curious. I haven't heard anybody really talk about this. What do you think, or I'd like to get your opinion on, what your thoughts are on Franklin and these other coaches that are successful but can't win those big games. Any insight into your thinking behind? I mean, is it – I just don't understand how they – because they're obviously good coaches, but they can't win those big games.
Yeah, great question.
It really is.
If I knew the answer to that, I'd probably still be making money. Or
You could be the Jimmy Sexton of the world.
But hey, that is a great question. I think sometimes – This might sound crazy, they might try too hard, put too much emphasis on a big game. I think your most consistent coaches are like your Sabins. Every team is Team X. Don't get too high, don't get too low. Plus, he had great players, no doubt. But Penn State has good players. But you're exactly right. And what a great question. I do not know the real answer to that. This is my opinion, that they put too much emphasis. Everybody gets tight from the players to the coaches, and they just choke. And I hate that word choke.
No, they're just. But there are some there are some coaches that seem to be able to handle that big game pressure just better than others.
Yeah, and that's a great question.
All right, thanks guys. That's all I got. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It, Brian. Spector is up next. Hey, Spector.
Hey guys, Dan's not there today, huh?
Well, he was here. He headed down to Troy to check. They've got an exhibition game. He wasn't going to call it, but he needs to get familiar with the players.
Yeah, you know I love Dan Peck, but you know, you get a word in edgewise now.
Yeah, good luck.
Hey, listen, I'm kind of confused here about Brian Kelly. you know, his first year 10-4, second year 10-3, third year 9-4. Am I missing something here? Yeah, I mean, if Hugh Freeze was 10-4, 10-3, and 9-4, would we be firing him?
No, but there are a couple of things. First of all, Brian Kelly has not ingratiated himself to a lot of the higher ups at LSU, to the media down there, and we were just talking with Brian,
yep, right,
about certain coaches not being able to win big ball games. That's been a situation for Brian Kelly as well. Has LSU been in the playoffs? See, that's the thing. LSU has won games, but they haven't been able to beat Alabama. They haven't been – well, they did. But, I mean, they haven't been able to get
consistent
over that hump and then contend for the national title that that Brian Kelly – this preseason, Brian Kelly, in one of his very short-tempered times with the media, sort of snarkily said, you know, we'll see you in the national championship. Yeah. You know, like, shut up asking your questions. We'll see you at the national championship. And apparently he and the AD haven't had the best relationship either. And then when you lose three games before November with a team that you told everybody, you know, just shut up and don't worry about our offense, we're going to play in the national championship, that can get you fired.
Well, I don't know what would have happened if they had hired Hugh Freeze instead of Brian Kelly back in 22.
There's – who knows? I mean, look, Auburn this year, I will argue Auburn this year has played better than LSU. LSU's 5-3, and LSU was a preseason top five team. Look at the Auburn's schedule has been much tougher than LSU's. Part of it has to do with who you're playing. If you get an easy schedule, you can win more ball games.
Yeah, with a proven quarterback.
Bill, it ain't how you play the game. It's whether you win or lose.
It's exactly. Well, that's right. But your schedule's got something to do with it.
Yeah. You said something earlier about John Summerall maybe going to LSU.
Folks down there seem to think that, you know, Lane Kiffin is their top target. John Summerall is number two on every list I've seen from LSU folks.
Well, I think he'd be number one on Auburn's list, so I think I'd go with the number one.
Well, it just depends. Auburn's job right now isn't open, and LSU's is. So they can at least they can be pursuing it much more obviously, you know, with his folks since they've got the opening. All Auburn can do is say if the, you know, have their reps say if things open, we'd love you to be interested. Yeah. I think John Summerall would be very interested if the Auburn job comes open.
Yeah, snooze, you lose, right?
Yep.
You know, Bill, you was talking about that dating that girl for the third time. You know, third time's a charm.
Can be. It can be, or three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, see you guys.
Who knows? I mean, you usually try. We'll get one. We've got to get to Jake Crane here momentarily. Who have we got?
Mike.
Hey, Mike.
All right, I'll be quick. Performance. Purely hypothetical. I love the way our defense is playing. Offense, you know, we know what that's going on. Coach, I know that I was old high school coach for a while myself, and we would always evaluate our players' alignment, assignment, and effort. And
yes,
on Mondays we would go over game film, and we would have everything on the boards, everybody graded out. And then in the business world, we pay people by performance.
Right.
Football, college football, has now moved into the business world with NIL, where players are getting paid. Purely hypothetical. Coach, what are your thoughts if college football were to go into paid employees as players that got paid on a performance basis? Like, not unlike when you have someone in a sales position where they get a base plus a commission, and that commission is based on how many dollars they drive in. Let's say it's in a player situation, I give you a base salary, then based on your alignment, assignment, and effort, basically how well you're doing, and each position group has its own metrics, evaluating that and then paying them so there's a performance pay. What are your thoughts on that, Coach?
Another great question. And
I like it.
I like the idea.
I mean, if you're going to pay, right. the players, I think that yes, there should be.
Yeah.
You know, here's justification incentives. For what you're getting. And incentives. Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That wouldn't be a bad idea, buddy. And we graded the same way. I was big on that. With just what you said: effort, assignment, and alignment. And effort was
assignment,
exactly, exactly.
I like it, Mike.
Yeah, good idea.
Let's write it up. Let's get it out there.
I hear you. Hey, thanks for the call.
Go.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Jake Crane of Crane and Company on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hey, this is DeMarcus Ritty, looking for a street legal golf cart. Diamond Golf Carts has the largest selections in the state. And the store is right off the Opelika Road, close to
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Head to the Drive hotline. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest. About to be Tuesday evening guest. I'd nearly forgotten that it's fall back time. Set the clocks back this weekend, so it will be completely dark next week when we welcome in our good friend Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Ah, man, it's going great. I'm glad you said that because I had no idea. So now at least I know for this weekend too. So
yeah, I'd forgotten, and I've got like 30 clocks that I have to set in my house. So, oh well.
Yeah, I just have the one on the phone, but it adjusts for me sometimes. But it is going to be nice to know why it's darker earlier.
Yeah, there you go. Well, here we are. It's a week later. Another coach is gone from the SEC, but it's not Hugh Freeze.
No, it's not. After that humongous, massive win against 2-5 Arkansas, he's around for another week. But look, I mean, in all seriousness, you know, it seems like the James Franklin firing, you know, kind of set a precedent a little bit, and the LSU thing spiraled so quickly.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
That shocked me, especially when you read about the meeting between Woodward and Brian Kelly and how that all went down. But you know, at the end of the day, I hope Hugh Freeze wins every game he coaches for the rest of his life at Auburn, and I will root for that.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm with you on that.
I'm just wondering, are we delaying the inevitable? And, man, this is starting to really, really resemble the Billy Napier situation.
Well, I mean, it's things, though, where it's really difficult to justify when you look at who Auburn lost to and how they lost. And granted, look, the offense was awful in those games, but then you have the opportunity. This is where you can't screw up. When you have the opportunity against teams like Arkansas and Kentucky, you've got to win those. And it's sort of like we were saying yesterday, Jake. I mean, it's like win in advance, survive in advance. That's the situation that it's in right now, because people wondering, you know, why didn't he get fired? Well, if you didn't get fired last week, you're sure not going to get fired after a win.
Well, you know,
unless you're Billy Napier.
That's
a year down the road. You know,
It is. Look, and you're right. I will say this on your point, though. Yeah, you've lost a lot of close games, but at Auburn, you get fired after I say you've lost a lot of.
Yeah,
it doesn't
absolutely
matter if they're close or not. And that's how it should be. Because the minute the standard drops, you're in trouble, especially in this day and age. And in year three, you know, especially when you look out there on the rest of the field and you see what Cignetti's doing, heck, you even see how much better Mississippi State is from year one to year two. I know they haven't learned to win yet, but he's really upgraded their personnel, and they're in games they have no business to be in. You're in year three, you move the budget forward to afford this roster, and you're out of the playoff discussion by the seventh game. That's just not good enough. Everybody knows that's not good enough. It just reminds me of that scene on Dodgeball when White Goodman goes over and he's like, listen, I love what you're doing at Average Joe's. I'm not okay, you're not okay, but that's okay. The people love it. It's not okay at Auburn. And to me, you're going to have to dig yourself out of this hole by not only winning the games you should win, but I think you're going to have to win one of Vandy and Bama.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I believe.
Yeah, I'm exactly with you. That's what I said yesterday. Hugh Freeze has got to win three out of four.
I mean, we're just sick of being the bridesmaid.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We're sick of watching everybody else get married. Heck, Vandy got married to a 10, and we're sitting over here just drinking and thinking.
It is. I mean, it is really crazy to look and just look around. You mentioned Kurt Cignetti, and I told Don this a little while ago. I had somebody say, you know, Cignetti probably has more than a little to do with some of these moves being made when they are, because they look and it's like, who was this guy? But, man, he gets to Indiana, and as soon as he gets there, they're playing, you know, they're in the playoff. And right now they're in the number two team in the country. They don't have the most highly touted roster of signees and transfers or anything, but they're there. So, I mean, I understand where every fan base is going, why aren't we? We've got players at least as good as that. If our coach can't do that, fire the bum and let's get the next guy like Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's not a lot of Kurt Cignettis walking around out there. But to your point, look, even in the age of NIL, recruiting is always going to be king. But coaching matters. Development matters. The culture you instill in your program, it matters, and it permeates and it blossoms into what you're either going to be or what you almost became or what you never had a chance to become. And if you follow Kurt Cignetti, the man just doesn't lose. And I'll give you another guy. Look at Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah.
I mean, the man just doesn't lose. Like, if you really look at it. So, and it's really hard. Nobody's saying it's easy. But when you're making the type of money that these guys are making, you better believe if you're at a place that has any sort of standard, it's always going to be keeping up with the Joneses. And at some point, you want to be the Joneses, or in this case, the Cignettis. So, look, I would much rather have a program that doesn't accept mediocrity or just above average, even if sometimes it can be dumb, and you can sit here and argue with Brian Kelly and James Franks on this at the end of the day, but I would much rather have a program that wants to be elite and will settle for nothing less than somebody that's just okay with being okay.
Yeah, it's going to be it's really interesting because you've got a situation right now where I don't think John Cohen would tell you, yeah, I'm okay with mediocrity, but you also you need that sort of the breaking point, I think, to go ahead and do this. I mean, I think everybody knows the situation that Hugh Freeze is in right now. He knows it. The problem is he looks like at times he feels it.
Well, yeah, I would just, again, if I had a buyout of anything $1 million or more, you'd never see me upset. Look, I know how competitive everybody is, but in the real world, if you lose your job at where you're at, you don't get $15 million
no.
sent to you with certain conditions. So excuse me if I don't shed a tear for somebody that, at worst case, is going to be riding a $25,000 wake boat up at Lake Martin when it all gets said and done. If my job would fire me for $50 million, I'd help him carry the stuff out like Orgeron did. So again, like, let's not act like these guys are coal miners or single mothers during the Great Depression. It's a really good gig, and at a place like Auburn, you should find a way to win some of these games eventually, or you need to find somewhere else to go.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what you're hearing about the job openings that there are in the SEC. We can get to Arkansas if we get a chance later, but I mean, I'm just interested in what you're hearing about Florida and now LSU. I mean, it sounds like Lane, and not surprisingly, is right there at the top of both lists.
Yeah, well, I'll say this about Lane. Anytime a guy leads off with, I've never made a decision about the money in my life, means he's made every decision about the money in his life. I'll go ahead and tell you, you don't lead with that one. Look, good on him. I think Lane's made a lot of changes, too, off the field that have made a lot more athletic directors comfortable
right.
with him. But let's not forget about, because Lane Kiffin's going to be the one you hear the most about. I don't think Saban's coming back. I don't think Urban's coming back. But with Lane, you know, I think sometimes people forget, as young as he is, he's already done the big brand thing. Heck, he was like 13 years old coaching the Raiders. It was like a
yeah, and Southern Cal at 50 then. Yeah.
So, like, he's done that circuit before. So he's in a lot different situation than maybe a guy like Clark Lee, that this is his first big head coaching gig, albeit at Vanderbilt, but that's a big job now thanks to Clark Lee. He hasn't done the big circuit thing. So, look, when I hear Florida, to me, I'm a firm believer in you go hire the best guy, but that doesn't mean you don't look at personality traits mm-hmm. that might fit. You know, I'm not a big trends guy, but it seems the coaches that win the best at Florida are the most arrogant and talk trash.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin fits that perfect. Drinkowitz fits that
he
perfect.
He really does. But, yep. I said yeah. the yep. exact same thing. Somebody, we were talking the other day, and I said, look, and we got a little heated battle about this. I said, Auburn and Florida, they aren't the same, and the fit means something. It matters, and guys that fit at one place don't necessarily fit at another.
That's true, but I will say, like, again, it's just whenever we're talking about fit, we have to define what that is. Like, I'm not a believer, and Coach Dunn, I think you'll back me up on this. I mean, you lived it. I don't think you have to be from a certain – I know you're not saying this, Bill, but I don't think you have to be from a certain place to
no.
coach in a certain place. I don't think you have to look a certain way to recruit a person that looks a certain way. But if you can get the best of both worlds and have somebody with a built-in advantage, because a lot of it is knowing the lay of the land.
Right.
A lot of it is knowing the recruiting territory that you have a lot of success in, understanding the league and the coaches that you're coaching against in that league. What I don't like is when I hear, you know, like Florida fans say, well, you know, we hired a Group of Five coach with Billy Napier. We're never going to do that again. That's the dumbest. Kurt Cignetti was a Group of Five coach.
Right,
that's right.
Like Nick Saban was a Group of Five. The minute you start cutting off people instead of just going to find the best candidate, I don't care if he's Group of Five, I don't care if he's Power Four, I don't care if he's
a coordinator
anywhere. Ted Lasso, NFL, it doesn't matter. You go hire the best guy, and I'm telling you, watch out for Joe Brady at LSU if
yep.
he's willing to come down.
Right.
Because I know he's in the pipeline of those young coaches that the NFL is loving to hire right now.
Yeah, that
yep.
that would make sense. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. How far behind is a school like Auburn that could make a move, likely to make a move, but doesn't for a while?
Well, yeah. The curse is that right now Florida and LSU and Penn State are open.
Yep.
Look, Auburn carries a big stick, but those places carry a big stick too. You can make an argument, and a very sound one, that Florida and LSU are two of the top five jobs in the country, if we're being honest.
We were speculating yesterday all three of those are legit top 10 jobs.
Yeah. I think Georgia's the best job in the country, just me personally. But, you know, the question becomes two things. One, what other openings are you competing against? Even if Auburn fired Hugh Freeze first, they wouldn't have named a new coach by now.
No.
And LSU and Florida would still be open. So I don't think that's as much as about timing. But the second question you have to ask is coaching cycle. How many good coaches, just like defensive line in 2026 recruiting, or linebackers in the 2026 NFL draft? It depends on the cycle. So how many great coaches are going to be available next year? You don't know. But then how many jobs like Florida and LSU are going to be open next year that you have to compete against? You don't know. What you should hope for is that Auburn turns this thing around, finds a way to go either 8-4 or the right 7-5. And this is a year where Hugh Freeze realizes, hey, I got to make some changes. Maybe I don't get a quarterback that's really a running back that can throw it kind of decent and make that adjustment and keep the roster somewhat intact. It's a tough spot for John Cohen right now, to be
it
honest
is.
With you, whether he fired Hugh 2 weeks ago or tomorrow.
Oh, I agree 100%, and that's one of the things that a lot of fans, I think, at times don't understand. They just feel like, well, you got to go ahead and do it, whether or not there is that best hire available for you out there. Where do you think John Sumrall fits in all this? I'm seeing his name, you know, popping up in a lot of places, Penn State, LSU. Obviously, LSU knows about him since he's at Tulane.
Yeah, so I talked to my friend Matt Moscona. We had him on the show yesterday. Did a deep dive into this. I don't think Lane's going to leave. I don't think he is, for the reason I mentioned earlier. I think that if what I'm hearing is correct, and the LSU money people want Sumrall, they're going to get Sumrall.
Yep.
The problem becomes, and think about this if you're an Auburn fan. What if Auburn hired UAB's coach? How excited would you be about that? What if Auburn hired South Alabama's coach? You wouldn't be nearly as excited as if you went out and got another Power Four coach
that you might not know as much about. That's right. I understand.
Again, like, I think most of the fan base will tell you, just like they didn't want Napier because he was at ULL, they don't want Summerall because they don't want to call a guy up from AAA to the majors. They want to go sign another major. They want to sign a major league all-star. But Summerall, I think, would be great for LSU. But selfishly, if it doesn't work out at Auburn, he's the guy that I want.
Yeah, I hear you. Great stuff as always, Jake.
Either that or Coach Don Dunn.
It wouldn't take that much, buddy.
Hey, look, they could get me for $100,000.
Hey, me too. And fire me the next day.
We have all the NIL money in the world.
That's right. I got about $4 when I played.
Yeah, as long as I can eat and get free breakfast at Byron's, I'll take $100,000.
There you go.
Man, great stuff as always, Jake. Obviously, this is a fun time, a busy time. What you got going and what's coming up on Crane & Company?
Well, what I got going right now is trying to make sure my nine-month-old doesn't rip the end of this drawstring on the sweater I'm wearing. But we got a ton going on. We dropped our college football playoff projections today, had our power rankings. I mean, we obviously talk a lot about Auburn, what's going on with Hugh Freeze as well. We instantly react to every Auburn game. Go over to YouTube. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We're almost to 200,000 subs, so help a Lee County boy out if y'all don't mind.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Jake. Have a great week, man. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, y'all be good.
Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. Got to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hey, y'all. It's Mark with Butcher Paper Barbecue. I have advertised my local business with the...
Fun show here this afternoon. Sort of I took the handoff from Dan early. And behind the lead blocking of Coach Dunn, we made it through the show today. Our thanks to Andy Burcham joining us in hour number one. Jake Crane here in hour number two. And all of our callers. Missed any of the show, check out the podcast of The Drive. Wherever you get your podcasts, all sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We're back tomorrow. Jason Caldwell joins us at the top of the show. Hope you will as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.